Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guys, huge news. After a year of recording remotely on Zoom, we are finally going live again. We're recording two episodes back to back every single month in London. We're doing a London residency.
Yes!
Genuinely could not be more excited.
And it's at the Museum of Comedy.
It's a fantastic venue, and you can come and see one show or you can stay for the double header. Shows are at 7 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Our first show is on the 20th of July, and then 31st of August, 28th of September, 26th of October. Those are all Tuesdays. It's Tipsy Tuesday. Tickets can be purchased from www.drunkwomensolvingcrime.com. Residency.
Residency. Tipsy Tuesdays.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
The crime was booking me for this gig. We have not got to that point on the Isle of Wight.
Don't promise us a culture war by proxy if you can't deliver, Wilkins. Come on.
They're calling everybody stupid and they're eating paninis and sushi.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Welcome to another episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. We are recording this at the tail end of the rainiest May that anyone has ever seen, but we are joined by the fantastic comedian, actor, writer, podcaster, and author, it's Izzy Sutton.
Hey!
Hello.
Thank
that was,
you.
That was a, why would I say that?
Hello. I'm a lady.
I've gone really high as well in my introduction. I was trying to keep the excitement going.
Yes. Like, and next.
Yeah.
Hello.
I'll that's never get a game voice. Show. Right, we're normal voices.
Yes. Yeah.
Professional. How are you?
I'm all right. I was actually thinking today that there might be a rainbow. You know, it's been going from like
Yes.
Rainy to... I went to the hairdressers to buy some shampoo and conditioner. And And because I've got a balayage now, she sold me some special shampoo and conditioner when she did it. So now I just think I have to go back and I probably don't have to.
Wait, I don't think Taylor knows what balayage means.
Oh, it's like... Well, I don't really, because someone said the other day, you haven't got a balayage, you've got an ombre.
Oh, wow.
So Taylor's still struggling with that.
So basically, it's like you've got big roots, basically. It's like your roots take up half or more of your hair. That's how I'd describe it.
It's not even the final product. It's just that they do the highlights by hand rather than foil. So actually, anything that's freehand is balayage. And I forget what balayage actually means. I thought it just meant by hand. I might have to look that
up. Is it French? It sounds like very fancy.
Guys, I don't normally Google, but keep talking because I'm looking it up.
Oh, yeah, so I was in there and they tried to give me some weird incense sticks free. Oh. I didn't want them because I don't like them. And last time I went to Airbnb, they were in every room and it like made my breathing go weird. Ooh. So I said, no, can you tell I'm not doing very much at the moment? And then a woman who just had her hair cut looked out of the window and went, oh, for God's sake. And it was because it was raining again. And I sort of thought, I don't know if I'd ever do that in hairdressers because I'm such a people pleaser that I'd just be like, I don't want to say for God's sake in front of all these people.
Yeah.
But I was like, I feel you. Like it's really hard to know what to wear. And it's like sunny. And then it's suddenly absolutely pissing it down. And I thought to myself then, trying to see the bright side, maybe there'll be a rainbow today.
Oh, lovely. Yes.
Woman will become happy. And I looked all day, but I couldn't see one. She's probably still really grumpy.
That woman's capable of being cheered up by a rainbow.
Rainbow.
She's really open to that.
My new hair is ruined, but
it was worth it.
Guys,
balayage means to sweep in French, to sweep. So it's the motion of sweeping it over. Sorry, I had to find that out immediately.
I sometimes take a picture of what I've swept up on my kitchen floor. I put it on Twitter and call it sooty sweep.
I see it every day and I fucking love
version.
It.
Thank you. It was worse in lockdown when we were all in all the time. And, like the amount of stuff on the floor was unbelievable. I think once there was like a hair dryer, like 5 Bing toys, so much pasta. And I could do a French version now called balayage sooty, it would be, wouldn't it?
Because sooty is
the adjective in this.
Yeah.
Ah, oui, oui.
Well, balayage, I'm glad sooty. You've got the title and the correct grammar. What else do you need?
Exactly.
I got to ask you, Izzy, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Yes. I was doing a gig at Imperial College. I had to try and remember which college it was. And Ellis just wrongly said, was it the Royal College of Music? And I was like, Royal College of Music students wouldn't have done that. and then I thought, well, actually, Imperial College is quite a good uni.
Yeah.
So it absolutely doesn't make sense.
Excuse.
Nice people go to good unis. So no, it was Imperial College near the Albert Hall. And I was doing a gig. I don't know if you guys have done these gigs where it's like loads and loads of students. And I was doing at that point, lots and lots of unions. And generally there could be some tricky ones. There could be some kind of terrible, but brilliant ones because also at that point, people didn't really have camera phones. and also there could just be some really horrible ones that you'd kind of look at and go, I don't think this is going to be very nice. And this was one of those because I looked at the fact that they were going to be drinking all day. That was in like the description. So they have wristbands.
Oh, no. Festival rules. Okay.
Yeah. No. Yes, it was basically a festival in one room.
Yeah.
I think they've been drinking since like the early afternoon.
Okay.
I'm not joking. I was on at something like 1:30 a.m.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mate. Oh, this is awful already.
This isn't the crime yet.
That's it. The crime was booking me for this gig. I've done like hard ones. I did a gig at Loughborough University, which was always hard.
Right.
I don't know why. I just never got on very well at Loughborough Uni.
I did Loughborough and hated it.
Did you? Yeah.
They're like the PE college, aren't they?
Yes, there are lots of sports. I don't think they really like songs about like elves who work in Sainsbury's and stuff, which is what I was doing. And like a really long story about a squirrel that bit my hand that I admit didn't really have an ending and relied on the goodwill in the room, of which there wasn't. Yeah, at Loughborough, like I'd had some hard times where, like, for example, a guy at Loughborough's summer ball, like a student just came onto the stage and grabbed the mic off me and was like, this is what I think of your set, and then a Mooney at the audience.
Oh,
and
then
just threw the mic onto the floor. So then I was just like thinking, when does it come to the point where you still get paid? Like, nobody just like, I've got to do my time. I've got to do my 20 minutes. I was just like, just carry on until 20 minutes have gone by.
Wow.
So I'd had all those kinds of gigs and I was like, I suppose someone coming onto the stage wasn't very common, but it had happened before.
Sure.
Anyway, I had to do 35 minutes.
Okay.
I was closing. Someone was comparing who I know. It was one of the nice boys who are,
okay,
you know, like,
which three? Which one? Yeah.
But we were all just sort of going, oh my God, they're so drunk. They're so drunk. Like, this really feels quite horrible. It kind of walked in and you were like, these are people who've been drinking for like 10 hours. It's not the same as even that thing, like, people having had like maybe 3 or 4 pints. I went on, and so I took a pint on, which is something that I used to do if the gig was hard. It was almost like you go, hey guys, I can drink too. I'm cool like you. So I did about 30 minutes and it was okay.
Cool.
Like, there were some people chatting, there was a bit of heckling, but it wasn't dramatically bad. It was just a real damp squib of a gig that no one would remember, right? Including me. So when it got to about 30 minutes, I was just like, this has been such a non-event. I just feel like I want to end on like a big laugh or a round of applause. So I had been chatting a little bit to the front row. I started talking to this guy in the front row who was kind of quite geeky and looked very shy. His mate started to say, he's a virgin, he's a virgin. And so I got him up on stage. And I was like, as he was getting up on stage, I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm just not a comic who gets stage. Like, a lot of them are really good at that, and that's like their thing, and they go and do Glastonbury and like the Pied Piper and lead these amazing impromptu. And I'm just not that comic. I like to do my set and then get off, really. So I was like, what am I doing? So then he was like standing next to me. So I said, are you a virgin? And he said, yeah, which I thought was sort of quite cool for him to admit that in front of everyone. Like, but you see, that was 10 years ago, and I think hopefully things have changed a little bit for virgins now. I like to think that like everyone's a bit more accepting of everyone, but maybe that's completely wrong. I don't know. But I thought that it was brave of him to admit it anyway in front of a room of his peers. So I put out my arm and I said, do you want to know what it's like to touch a real woman's arm? That got a laugh. And then I thought, if he touches my arm, maybe it can just elicit a round of applause. Then I'll kind of get off stage on that round of applause too. And I'll be like, thank you very much. Good night. So I put my arm out in front of me and he put his hand through the gap under my arm and grabbed my boob.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, oh. I was so shocked. And also, I just had in my head that I had to wrap things up and had to get a big laugh. And like, it was like, I don't know. Sometimes I think when things like that happen, you're so unprepared for it. And also, if you're on stage, your instincts are slightly different. And
totally.
I was just like, okay, thinking, oh my God, what the fuck is happening? And then he just kind of stayed on stage. Then I tried to, I can't remember what I did, whether do a bit of material or chat to him again or something to try and kind of wrap things up. And then it just became clear that everything was unraveling. And then, so there was a security guard standing to the side of the stage who did nothing. And then I found out later that he was someone dressed in fancy dress as a security guard.
Oh my God.
I didn't like really understand that element of it. Like, he'd been too old to be a student, but that was his story anyway. I don't know if he actually was a security guard and he felt bad that he didn't do anything.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, in the end, the nice man who was comparing just came, kind of had to come onto the stage and stop me from talking because I like, just wouldn't stop trying to rescue the gig. And he was just like, okay, Z, thanks so much.
Oh, wow.
And then like, as I got off, I was like, I started to feel really sad, I suppose, because I was like, oh, I felt really humiliated and kind of really sad about it. To be honest, I didn't feel like distressed or anything, but I felt really humiliated, really disappointed and really angry.
You can't even trust the virgins at uni. This pisses me off.
Yeah, they're the worst ones.
I know.
God, a fake security guard too, that just sort of sums up the, oh, I really had zero protection all along.
Yeah, it was so weird. Like, I don't get that bit of it. It feels like such a good excuse to say like, oh, I'm just in fancy dress. You know, like you're a doctor and you're on a plane and doctors don't dress as doctors.
It's actually like,
They should.
Yeah. That's a plot point in Hocus Pocus. There's that guy dressed as a police officer and they report that they woke up the witches, and then he just tells them to not waste his time, but then it turns out he's not a cop. He's just in fancy dress.
So it's a bit like when you go into the mental asylum and the person in the white coat is like, welcome, my name is Professor.
Yeah.
And then they turn out to be.
I remember the one time I've ever been questioned by the police was when they came to our halls of residence at uni, and they came into our kitchen and we'd been out on a night out. And we were all dressed as cops and robbers. And it was just like, it was ridiculous.
Oh my God.
I literally had a bag that said swag. And this policeman was saying there's been some robberies in a park and people's phones have been taken. And I was like, well, you can check it. It's just like, I think it was pillowcases that I'd stuffed it with. I'd stuffed a pillowcase with pillowcases.
Wow. I love that. There's a real sketch in that, isn't there?
Fuck that guy, you know, the entitlement that he thinks that he can come on stage to somebody who's doing their job. Yeah.
And I know in the grand scheme of things, there are far, far, far worse crimes. But I was just sort of thinking on my way home, like, not that many people in this country, I hope, go to work and think, I really hope someone doesn't grab my breast today. Like, just kind of like, that is such a shit end to the day. And also, I think without overanalyzing it too much, it is that thing of like, I never think about being a woman in comedy. I don't find it that useful.
Sure.
But other people sometimes do, annoyingly. And I feel like for him to do that, it was like just trying to take away any agency, the little agency I had at that point.
It was him reminding you that you had female body parts that he felt entitled to, like that gave him some kind of extra... There's a fuck you in there a little bit, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sit comfortably, obviously.
Well, I hope he's never used his degree, and I hope that he got a 2-2, and I hope he earns minimum wage and is very unhappy in his life. Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy. And if he'd have touched your arm, it would have been much funnier. So he really ruined the gag.
Yeah, he should have just touched my arm.
The funny gag would be he'd touch his arm and then like pretend he was having some kind of convulsion because it was so exciting.
Exactly.
It's a great gag. There was a gag there and he missed it.
I know.
It could fucking have been amateur.
Yeah.
That's what angers me more than the sexual assault. It's that fucking bad gag, man.
Yeah. I'm angered by anyone who organizes a gig where it's going to be that late and people drinking all day. It's like the worst slot you could have in Edinburgh, plus people whose hormones are still leveling. Like, it's the worst combination.
I know. It's like, what was that? Like, as soon as you hear the word wristband, you're like, it's not. It's not good.
Yeah, let's have wristband all day drinking with people that don't know about consent. This will be brilliant. Izzy, we always ask everyone, what would you say if you had the perp now? Like, they can't see you necessarily. You have all the power. But if you want to, you can, like, what would you say or do to them?
I guess I'd say you should have grabbed my arm. You're right. It would have been so much funnier. Yeah, you should have grabbed my arm, I said. Yeah.
Dude. No, brilliant. Okay. Well, I hope that this has been in some way cathartic for you.
Yes, actually.
And we all agree that dude sucks.
Yep.
That dude sucks dicks in hell.
Katie's sass is coming on in leaps and bounds.
It is. I'm quoting The Exorcist. Oh, that's cocks in hell. So your mother sucks cocks in hell. Anyway.
Dicks is funnier, isn't it?
Dicks is funnier because cocks is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Dicks is
Slightly more British, doesn't it? Very nice.
Dicks are not sexy.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
Okay, now that we've clarified the words you can use for sexy talk, I'm going to move on to the main case that we're going to be talking about. Now, the case that we're going to be discussing today centres around a court case, and the accused of this case is a high school teacher. So my first two questions, question one, is this teacher male or female? And question two, what have they been accused of?
Wow, okay, straight in.
Yeah.
I think they're female.
Okay. Female from Izzy, and what's the crime?
I think it's to do with a cupboard.
Uh-oh.
Misuse of paperclips.
Yes. Yes. Squirreling away paperclips for future use. A body.
Ooh, okay.
I'm seeing a body. I'm seeing a cupboard.
Nice.
But I don't think that the female is the perpetrator. I think she's an accessory.
Ooh, okay.
Wow.
Okay.
This is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
They got a skeleton, you know, like in science you have.
Yeah.
And like the real skeleton.
Yeah.
I don't know if they normally
the biology lab. Yeah.
I don't know if they're normally, they probably aren't normally real ones, but this school got a real one.
It's okay.
Like it's a school where they want everything to kind of be real.
Sure.
They get a real skeleton. The skeleton is of the old caretaker. This is it. The caretaker wanted to donate his skeleton to the school for science lessons. This happened, but a gold ring was left on the finger
of
the skeleton, and the female teacher stole it and put it in a cupboard.
Wow.
Oh, my.
Okay.
Like, this isn't the right answer. I'm leaving right now. That's the story I want to hear.
Sort of want to apologise that my case is not going to be as good as the story that Izzy has just told us.
Literally, I'm like a PE teacher got a girl pregnant. That's all I was thinking. Like,
okay.
I hate to say that's where my head went to. I thought male teacher inappropriate relationship with student. You also said high school, which makes me think this is in America. Because you don't say that here as much.
We don't say it as much, no.
I went to a high school, but that's because they did things differently on the Isle of Wight. And you were very much encouraged to fuck a teacher. but I think, like, actually...
Else will you get a job on the island, after all?
The other thing I was thinking was potentially could it be a teacher who's teaching people stuff they shouldn't be taught in the sense that, you know, it's... maybe it was of a time whereby... you shouldn't be learning about this stuff, but actually it's stuff now where, like, of course you should learn about that.
Okay, interesting.
Ooh, like sex ed, but it was a Catholic school and he taught about contraception.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So I've got female from Izzy stole a ring off the dead caretakers.
Feels like an idiot.
Yes. No, it's amazing. It's like the best straight off the bat answer we've ever had. These guys started with sexual abuse and then have moved on to teaching inappropriate content. Are you sticking with that as well, Taylor?
Yeah, if Hannah is.
Okay.
Hannah's usually cracking cases lately, so I'm just going to follow her lead.
Okay. Now, you know what? I'm going to give it to Hannah, actually.
Whoa.
The teacher is male and they have been accused of teaching evolution in a school.
Oh. Oh, no. We have not got to that point on the Isle of Wight.
So now this is one of many trials that calls itself the trial of the century. They can't all be the trial of the century. It is as meaningless as quotes on an Edinburgh poster. And I don't mean to slag off my own case or my own Edinburgh posters, but come on. So we are in Tennessee, America. The teacher's name was John Scopes. He has violated something called the Butler Act, which made it unlawful to teach human evolution in any state-funded school. Now, this trial gets referred to both as the State of Tennessee versus John Thomas Scopes, and also as the Scopes Monkey Trial. So my next question, what year is this?
2019
from Hannah.
I mean, seriously, it could be so recent.
Yeah, it could. It's easy to think it's like the times of the Crucible, but actually, I think it could be maybe the early noughties, like maybe 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I know they were still putting the way that they would deal with this, and they might still do this in some states, is they would put these disclaimer stickers on all of the books. So they would have books with evolution as a lesson. And then the sticker on the front, like, this is just one crazy idea. And they would just slap it on all the books. So this was in like the 80s and 90s, I think. So, but for it to have to go to court, for him to have taught it and actually it makes it to court, I'm going to say 1967.
Okay. Taylor is the closest. It is 1925.
Oh, wow. Okay. Early.
Okay. And I just want to say for the record, this shouldn't be called the Scopes monkey trial, because evolution isn't saying that we descended from monkeys. It's saying we had a common ancestor with monkeys. So, like, come on.
And not monkeys, apes.
Yes. Thank you.
They fucked up. Maybe they should learn about evolution before they try to give something a clever title.
Right. But look,
I just dropped my pencil.
I love that you're taking notes, though.
Yeah.
It's pink, so I can't see anything I'm writing, but it's still, you know, it's important.
That still counts. This is female workplace. Also, like, it's very easy to sneer at people that don't believe in evolution. So let's carry on doing that for a bit longer. Right. Now, it's probably also worth me saying that this whole case could be classified as part of this ongoing, never-ending culture war between conservatives and whatever the opposite of somebody that embraces knowledge. I don't want to take sides. So there's this huge divide. Now, it's not that lot. I mean, like, but it's kind of like North America versus South America. It's the fault lines of the American Civil War. This trial is basically a culture war by proxy. So I'm going to introduce some of the players, and I could do this in a wrestling voice if it makes it more fun.
Yes, please.
In the right wing, very conservative. I can't really do a wrestling voice, turns out. I'll try. Very Christian corner, we have state representative and I haven't committed. I'm giving up. I'm bailing. I'm not sassy enough yet.
Mm. I really liked it.
Thank you. I should
have done with you at the gig.
So we have this guy, John Butler. He is the head of the World Christian Fundamentalist Association. He is responsible for the Butler Act. It is literally named after him. He stated...
Not Jared Butler, which is weird. That's what I was going.
It's so weird how it's not Jared Butler. So he said, I didn't know anything about evolution, which is a great start. Obviously, you want the man that knows nothing about something to be in charge of it. He goes on, I had read in the papers that boys and girls were coming home from school and telling their fathers and mothers that the Bible was all nonsense. So naturally, instead of reading up more about that, he just started lobbying to get evolution banned. Look, because the thing is, I once read that if I clicked on a link, I would see the kid who played Matilda, what she looked like now, and that I wouldn't believe it. And then I clicked on the link, and she actually looked absolutely just fine and nice. So I just think, just do the basic amount of research. Just click on the link once. Anyway, before you start trying to pass laws. So it gets passed in Tennessee in March 1925. And this governor guy signs it into law because he's trying to suck up to all the farmers and get all the rural people on side, but he doesn't really care. Now, I promised you a culture war by proxy. We got to meet the other side. Question.
Don't promise us a culture war by proxy if you can't deliver, Wilkins. Come on.
Exactly. So what organization might be the opposite of the World Christian Fundamentals Association?
ACLU?
You know what? No one else gets to answer. Taylor is correct.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, I love it when people get shit right.
Yes, baby. So yeah, it's the ACLU. They obviously still exist today and they advocate for civil liberties. They fight systemic equality. They advocate for Black Lives Matter. They are the good guys. And in 1925, they are still at least the better guys. Also, the thing about the ACLU is that they want to unlock the true promise and potential of the American dream of freedom and equality for all. So they see this law being passed. They're not happy. They're like, no, come on, this is not constitutional. We didn't have a revolution to end up with these anti-intellectual laws. You're embarrassing us in front of the other countries. Stop making America look like a bag of dicks. I'm paraphrasing. So they decide to do this test case there. So they finance this whole thing. They get this guy, John Scopes, and they're like, will you say you broke the law so we can test this thing? We want to publicize how stupid this law is. And he's like, yeah, sure. He's not even the regular biology teacher. He was a substitute teacher that normally taught PE.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Subs.
He agrees to do it. He gets charged on May 5th, 1925, with teaching evolution from a chapter in this book. which describes the theory of evolution. And we are now hurtling towards the trial of the century. We need big names for the lawyers. We need to this is the first trial that ever got broadcast on the radio.
Oh, wow.
And they're busing people in. People are getting trains. They're sleeping in corridors. Oh, everyone comes to this place for the sensational trial.
It's also easy to call it the trial of the century when you're only a couple decades into the century. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Like, so far.
Nothing else will happen. Yeah.
People are just throwing that term around willy-nilly. So the big name lawyer that is for the prosecution is this highly prestigious William Jennings Bryan. Now, he was a former Secretary of State and he was a 3-time presidential candidate.
Oh.
Question, did he ever win an election and become president?
How were his emails?
What was his name?
William Jennings Bryan.
Well, I won't answer because it's just not fair.
Oh, so Taylor knows if there was a president called Brian. I feel Brian is the name of like the landlord at my local pub, so I don't think he was the president.
Yeah, Brian doesn't sound very
presidential.
They're not as Trump, and he did a great job, guys.
Yeah. That instinct is correct.
He should have been the trial of the century if things had gone the right way.
Yes.
And I'm talking before his presidency in the right century. Mm. I think I've made my point. This is why I gave up stand-up.
Yeah. End all your jokes with, I think I made my point.
That's the title of the show as well.
Yes.
Oh, God.
It's actually a great title. Yeah. Is it the I think? I made my point. It's like, I think I made my point, guys.
Yeah.
I'm not too hot on names. And I feel again, like Hannah said, like Brian is such, in Britain, it's such kind of like Brian.
Yeah.
It would have been. Hello, Brian.
I was going to say, hello, Brian.
All right. So you're going not the president?
I'm going to say not.
Hannah going not the president?
Not the president? No, not on my watch. Not Brian.
Taylor.
He was not president.
He was never the president.
No.
He didn't win.
Taylor, I'm really impressed that you knew that he wasn't. If you knew that he was, it'd be like, yeah. Sure. But you knew that he wasn't. So that means you know all the presidents.
I could rattle them all off. I really couldn't. But it's amazing how much they drill this into you. Like at some point in my life, I did know all the presidents and I would have been able to rattle them off. And oh my God, my husband finds that so strange. And I guess it is a bit.
And then you say, no, it's patriotism.
But then, likewise, in the UK, you're going to learn about all the monarchs. Like, I definitely know people who can, like, rattle off.
I don't think I could rattle them off. My mum used to know this, like, rhyme or song for remembering all the order of the monarchs that was actually really convoluted and hard to learn.
Yeah, it's as bad as memorising
them. If you spend 36 hours memorising this song, but it did work. Like she could go in blah, 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 King Henry IV was, so it was quite cool. But I feel like we generally, I didn't go to a brilliant school. Like my primary school, there were like three-year groups in one classroom for the 3 years because it was so small. There were like 52 kids in the whole school.
Right.
So, yeah, I know. So I never got, I blame my lack of knowledge of geography and history on that.
But, no, that's a good excuse.
I like, Woody Woodrow, right? He was a president. Is that right?
Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah. Woodrow Wilson.
Woody Woodrow.
I knew it was a Woody Woodward.
Hannah learned it from a cartoon.
That's the one thing I committed to in this podcast. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's Woody Woodward. What did I say? Edward
Woody Woodrow. You got it half right.
Is he called Wilfred Woodrow?
Style it out as a nickname. Hannah has a nickname for him.
Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson,
okay. Not Woody Woodward. Oh, God, I don't know what I said.
Now, listen.
You made it so much better.
I would love to laugh at Hannah all day, but I've got to move on.
Drunk women solving crime.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This guy who didn't win the elections three times, he's also this hugely famous orator who would talk about theology and the Bible and stuff. And people would go and see his talks because there was no Netflix. And in fact, when the Butler Law had passed, this guy had thanked the governor that signed it enthusiastically, saying, "The Christian parents of the state owe you a debt of gratitude for saving their children from the poisonous influence of an unproven hypothesis," which is obviously the opposite of the impartial list of facts that the Bible is. So good. The team for the defense, defending John Scopes, the substitute teacher, is mainly this guy, Clarence Darrow. And there's a little team of people behind them. And they wrote to someone famous asking this person for help. So my question is, what famous author of the day did they ask to help them with this trial?
Ooh. What year was it again?
1925.
Was it Woody Woodward? I don't even know what I said. Woody Woodrow is what I said at the beginning.
Woody Woodrow. Yeah, Woodrow. Oh, so great. That was probably his nickname. It's cool. It's great.
Oh, we're tight, man.
Oh, my gosh. Arthur.
I'd like to say Arthur Miller.
Arthur Miller?
I think he might have been a toddler then.
When was Hemingway around? Or Twain, maybe? When were they? Yeah.
Twain and Hemingway?
Twain's earlier. Ooh.
Any more
guesses? Scott Fitzgerald.
Yes. Nice. Any more guesses?
Stephen King. He's getting on.
Okay. None of you are correct. It was H.G. Wells.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So they were partly hoping to attract massive press coverage, because this whole thing is about the sensationalism a bit as well. One of the lawyers in the defense group wrote to H.G. Wells asking him to join the defense team. So my next question, was there a response from Wells? And if so, what did he say?
I want him to have said yes.
H.G. Wells, what did he do? Did he do War of the Worlds, or am I just completely in that?
Yeah, no, he did. And The Time Machine and like all the sci-fi stuff. He gets credited as sort of like inventing sci-fi, but actually it was Mary Shelley.
Okay. Yes, it was.
The first sci-fi book was Frankenstein.
Yes.
My guess is he's going to turn them down and he's going to have a really sassy comment about why. And I'm not sure what it is, but it'll be like, until people evolve with blah, 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 I'm not going to waste my time with your little circus. Da, 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 da.
Okay.
What would be in it for him? Like, presumably they wouldn't be offering him money. It would be a lot of work, wouldn't it? Publicity.
Yeah, it would be a lot of work. He'd have to travel to America.
I think he said no as well.
Okay, so you guys are correct. He did respond and he said no. I don't know about how sassy this is for Taylor's good example.
If but he used it in the voice, I did anything he, sassy.
That's true.
I would love to come to your party. I'll see you soon.
Wells replied that he had no legal training in Britain, let alone America, and he declined the offer. So it's kind of sassy. As I said, wanting press was a huge part of this. This trial was deliberately staged in order to attract publicity, partly because they wanted publicity. This small town has been down on its luck and they want all this money. So that's working out great because everyone's coming to this town. And also both pro and anti-evolution sides are just trying to rinse publicity out of the situation, you know, try and spin it in their favour. So we properly have a media circus. We've got this trial of the century.
the trial is presided over by this judge called Judge T. Ralston, and he is super biased. He's very conservative and Christian. So he believes that the Bible is literally true. Because there were people at this time that were, they were called modernists, and they were trying to say, hey, it's a metaphor. Each day that God invented a day was an epoch of time. You know how, like, we all learn at school, hey, these things aren't contradictory. They're fine. They both can exist.
Yeah, because in the interest of being fair and balanced, but not in a Fox News kind of way. There are lots of religious people who still believe in evolution. Like, yes. They're not mutually exclusive.
No, and it's not.
But it depends how literal you are.
Yes.
And how fundamentalist you are about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
how afraid you are. I mean, that's what it really is, isn't it? Just how scared are you?
It does feel that way, actually. Yeah. So this guy is biased, but I like. It's also, I just feel like I should say as well, because it's very easy to be like, oh, God, these people are idiots. But because of the culture war fault lines type stuff, there is sort of this sense that the fancy ACLU lawyers have come down from North America and they're trying to tell the South what to do. Mm. And, like, you know, they're calling everybody stupid and they're eating paninis and sushi and, like, you know, saying things like, actually, Frankenstein is the name of the doctor, not the monster. Oh, my God, didn't you know that? And they're just making everyone feel shit.
I genuinely thought, like, you were going to quote yourself by saying Frankenstein's actually the beginning of sci-fi.
Yeah. Just got it on the brain. I'm also, any chance I can bring that up. There is this element that, like, you know, the North are throwing their weight around and the South are sort of like not happy about it.
Sure.
But also the North are correct. So, like, it's not nice. I try to be all neutral and then I mess it up at the end. But anyway, I'm just trying to say I have empathy. But also there's stuff is science, come on. So this judge is super conservative. He's prejudiced. He's sick of everyone talking about sushi, like believes that the Bible is literal. He's not happy about any of this. So he does loads of stuff, which is people argued was unfair. He's keeps threatening contempt of court. He's like, he quotes Genesis at the start of the trial. He warned the jury not to judge the merit of the Butler law, which was very flawed, but to focus on the fact that the law has been broken. And the jury foreman himself was unconvinced about the merit of the act, because we'll get into this in a sec, but it's like stupid. They will have to follow the instructions of the judge. So the trial begins and the defense argues that there is no conflict between evolution and the creation account in the Bible, because this is called theistic evolution and the modernists are like, hey, we can have both. To support this claim, the defense team for John Scopes, the substitute teacher, brought in 8 experts on evolution. Question, how many of those 8 experts did the conservative judge allow to testify in the court?
I'm assuming they were all supposed to testify.
They were all supposed to testify.
Is it possible that some of them were apes and to kind of demonstrate the evidence? Like, you can't actually talk, you're an ape.
Like, so that is an ape.
Trying to think of reasons that he wouldn't allow.
That's exactly it, isn't it?
You don't need to think of reasons. You just have to tell me the number. How many of the 8 are allowed in?
I'm going to say 1.
I'm going to say 2.
None.
Okay. You guys are all super close, but Taylor is spot on. One of them is allowed.
But probably only because he had to allow one.
I mean, I don't know what his reasoning was, but the one that's allowed is this Dr. Maynard Metcalf, who is a zoologist from Johns Hopkins University. The other 7 are not allowed to testify in person, but they're allowed to submit written statements in case it goes to appeal. So this Darrow guy that's the defense lawyer can't hide his annoyance. He makes this sarcastic comment to the judge, and apparently he makes loads of these sarcastic comments. You know, he's like, oh, you agreed to all their suggestions, but you won't agree to ours. And then he had to apologize the next day to stop himself from being in contempt of court.
Oh, so man. Like,
you gotta, this is a good courtroom drama. You would watch this on Netflix. Like, so this is why they're all crowded into the courtroom.
Just like you, he was like, I'm going to be sassy this year. I'm trying to be polite in court.
That was his New Year's resolution. I'm going to sass that judge.
Damn it.
So prosecuting lawyer William Jennings Bryan, the religious nut who kept trying to be president,
makes his arguments. And this guy is mad at science. I think science did not want to go out with him in high school. He comes across to me as very angry. And my source said that at one point, this guy chastised evolution for teaching children that humans were but one of 35,000 types of mammals. And he bemoaned the notion that human beings were descended not even from American monkeys, but from old world monkeys.
Oh, wow.
And there is a lot to unpack.
There's a lot to unpack there.
I love that there's this hierarchy. How did the monkeys get to America, Brian? How did they get there? We all stole the country. But also...
Also, old world monkeys is just...
It's incredible. You hate old world monkeys because you are an old world monkey. You hate yourself. Also, what I did like about that was that it just feels a bit like the kind of like, you know, the buy American, support American cars and only descend from American monkeys. It's like America first, American
How do you
first.
Know that they're American monkeys? It's like they're going to be where, they've got a flag.
I know, American
flag, like, or a bandana with the American flag on it around their heads. Like,
they tip really well.
Amazing.
Yeah. They don't like waiting in traffic. I'm just thinking about New York.
Yeah.
They beep their horns. Yeah.
It's crazy. So that's his whole deal. So he's like pro-America, anti-old world monkeys. I don't know what else. I don't know what else to tell you about this guy.
Just because as soon as someone says old world, I think of, because I love baking, so I think of my like yeast risen, like
some nice bread.
Yes, yeah. So I'm just picturing these monkeys with like a poppy seed roll.
And it's really homey and it smells great.
Yeah.
I think of wine, because I did years and years in the wine industry. I think of old world wine.
Oh, what's that like?
Now I can't quite remember, even though I had a GNBQ in wine at one point, the equivalent.
Oh my God, that's an awesome qualification.
I think I had that, but just from drinking.
Exactly. I went to the University of Wine, guys. Oddbins take wine tasting very seriously and they sent us on a lot of courses.
Wow.
It was a great company to work for and they do take it very seriously. If you go, it sounds like I'm just advertising Oddbins, but they do really know their stuff. Anyway, Old World, as far as I remember, is like New World is stuff like Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, I get you. Okay. Yeah.
An old world is things like France and Italy.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that, that checks out.
Phew.
Oh,
I could still be called into court as a wine expert.
Yes.
I'd say yes. It wouldn't be like H.G. Wells.
Yeah. Fucking help him out.
University of Wine.
That is good. That is you're our most qualified ever detective.
Oh yeah.
There's this other huge problem with this law, which puts any teacher in a real catch-22 situation. So question, want to guess what this catch-22 situation is?
So what was the law specifically? Sorry.
So the Butler Act prohibited the teaching of the theory of evolution.
The catch-22?
It was in the syllabus? Did you have to teach it?
Yes, ding, ding, ding. Hannah is correct. So another law, state law, literally required teachers to use a textbook that explicitly described and endorsed the theory of evolution.
Okay.
So teachers are literally going to be breaking one of these two laws.
This is great.
Like one way or another. It's like, that is a fun Ofsted report. Like, well, we're marking you down for teaching evolution, but you also get full marks for teaching evolution. But overall, there's room
for improvement. I love the idea that teaching evolution... The blinds would come down on Evolution Day, like, okay, we're going to talk about a guy called Darwin, but keep it down.
Yeah. Like, yeah, how do you get around that? It's crazy. A big shout out to all the teachers that might be listening to this podcast.
Yes.
And then the defense hits another snag. Question, what snag do they hit?
So the defense are defending...
They're defending John Scopes.
Okay, okay. Maybe has John Scopes got something in his history? Because, you know, sometimes... people will find things out about somebody and try to sort of like make them not as legit as they are. So maybe they found out something about little Johnny Stoke.
That maybe he goes to church.
Okay.
Believes in...
The Bible's literal.
Yeah. Don't, it's kind of... You know, on Thursdays, I actually think the Bible's right, but on
Friday. Yeah. Okay. So you think Scopes is in some way compromised? Any advance, Taylor?
Nothing comes to mind.
Okay.
I think if it feels like it might be something they previously didn't know about him. If it's a snag that they encounter, so he hasn't divulged something.
Okay. You got it. It was a great thought. The snag has nothing to do with Scopes himself. What happens is they run out of witnesses because they've literally only been allowed one of their eight witnesses. They run out of witnesses on like day six of the trial because the judge hasn't allowed any of the people. The judge said that the scientific witnesses were irrelevant for a trial about science. So they can't use any of them and they have got no one else to call to the stand.
Oh, okay.
Question, what do they do about this?
They call God to the stand. He'll settle
Close.
Us.
They call Close. Someone to the stand. Who do they call?
The Pope.
Nice. Any advance on Pope?
Well, I want to say the King, but there's no King in America.
There's no King.
Elvis.
Elvis. He's only about to be born, yeah. Baby Elvis.
Who was the president then?
Oh, have they got a religious leader in the state of Tennessee who believes in evolution?
That's a good guess. I'm going to cut to the chase. They actually call the wannabe president lawyer, the prosecuting guy, to the stand.
Oh.
And they call him to the stand as an expert on the Bible to quiz him about the Bible instead. And he agrees to it. So he's the prosecuting lawyer and they put him on the stand as an expert on the Bible.
Wow, Brian.
A conflict of interest.
I know, right? But the conservative judge allows it. This is, I think, probably my favourite bit of this whole trial because then they start quizzing him on stuff like, where did Cain's wife come from? Bible fans will know this story. I'll just do a quick recap for anyone listening that doesn't know. So if Adam and Eve are the first two people ever, and they have two sons, Cain and Abel, and then suddenly Cain has a wife. Where the fuck is his wife come from? Is he fucking Eve? Where are these other women? What's happening? This is the point that the trial turns into like a stoned student conversation at 3 a.m. in Freshers Week, where they're like, but dude, what's the sound of one hand clapping? Like, it's just crazy. So they're like, but where did Cain's wife come from? And it's just madness. So then everybody's like debating the plot holes and miracles of the Bible. There's big dick swinging energy on both sides, which is also one of the lesser known Psalms. And finally, the judge strikes some of the stuff that he didn't like from the record, probably the dick stuff. And we get the final verdict. So my question is Scopes found guilty or not guilty?
Oh, he has to be found guilty after all this.
Like, this is what I think. Like the fact that the judge is only allowed one witness.
Yeah.
You think he's not going to suddenly do a U-turn and be like,
yeah,
you guys have made me think about this. Yeah.
I was a ball nice.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a jury, but it was the judge that was making the decision. Is that right?
Well, it was officially the jury, but the judge super led them down a certain path and they're not really supposed to disagree with him.
Yeah, even if it was the jury, we all know substitute teachers cannot control a room. So he would not have them on side. I think he's guilty, man. He's found guilty.
Okay. Izzy, do you think he's found guilty as well?
Yeah, I do.
You guys are all correct. He is found guilty. He freely admitted that he taught evolution and broken the Butler Act. The jury had been instructed to disregard how contradictory all the laws were, or that science and religion could still be compatible. So yeah, he was fined $100, which is $1,500 today.
Okay.
Now, both sides regarded this case as a victory. Question, why did they both think they'd won when one side clearly lost?
Well, didn't one, like, I guess they wanted to prove that the Gerard Butler rule was just ridiculous. And that's... But they were like high school down. They were like, okay, this is not... I'm just going to continually quote Gerard Butler films from now on. So, the point was, there was a geostorm and then... No, I think that...
This is your next Edinburgh show. The Butler did it.
And the Gerard Butler did it. What was it? The best films of all time. Yeah. I think that they thought it was a victory because they proved just how sort of silly it is in the sense that, you know, they can have all this evidence and they can have all these sort of things that sort of prove it. But
yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I think that it was a victory for them. And the other side, obviously, that he was found guilty. So that's an obvious victory for them. But.
Okay.
What amazing PR they got out of all this. Like, again, you go back to people are calling it the trial of the century. There's all this press. It's the first case that's on the radio. So it's being consumed. So it doesn't really matter what the outcome was.
No, maybe they always expected to lose.
Yeah.
But they did it kind of for and like, to raise the profile of...
Yeah, because yeah. actually losing is its own victory because they're showing how bad something is. Mm. I hear you. Those are all good points. And I think actually you're probably right. And they probably did all consider those things like a bonus. But what also happened was there was a mad technicality where the maximum fine should only have been $50. And that invalidated the whole thing. And it was thrown out. It was like invalid in the end. So after all of that drama, it was just a big waste of everybody's time.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
And that was because he just fined the wrong amount. And then it meant...
Yeah.
Oh my God, you'd be so annoyed if, like, it's like, who are you going to blame on? Someone put like an extra zero on a piece of paper.
I think it was the judge's fault. I think he got carried away. Somebody on that team, either the judge or that other guy, they got very trigger happy and like, yeah, we're fining you, but it wasn't up to them to, and they should have known that it wasn't the fine. And it was like it was admin basically that was the problem.
Wow.
And my final question is, what year was the Butler Law withdrawn?
Oh, was Gerard Butler in 2012? I don't think he was. desperately trying to find a link. I imagine it was probably sort of like later than we think. I was about to say 1912, but that was just before that this happened. 1987.
1987, okay.
I'm going to go with the year I said before, which is when I thought this took place, 1967, except it was probably...
We've got 67, we've got 87. Izzy?
I'm going to go, I think it was before I was born.
Okay.
Which was 78. So I'm going to go for 74.
Okay. You know what? This almost never happens, but it's happened again. Taylor is spot on. It is 1967.
Wow. Well done. Weird that I said it at the beginning.
Yeah.
I just had a feeling.
And obviously, like, the culture wars are ongoing. Other states were doing similar stuff, blah, blah, blah.
But yeah, I mean, it is that sort of time in the States. So it's
particular law. So let's raise a glass to Darwin, I guess, and John Scopes.
Yes.
Yes.
Different than Snopes. I keep thinking of Snopes.
Drunk women solving crime.
So guys, for this week's Patreon shout out, we had a little bit of drama at Drunk Women HQ because it was brought to my attention by a lovely patron called Laura that she had not had her shout out, even though she had joined way back when we had first launched. And I keep a very detailed Excel spreadsheet of my shout outs according to which guest they've been on. And so we went down a rabbit hole and we just couldn't solve it. And it still keeps me up at night that I missed out about a dozen people from their shout outs. So I did what any sane person would. And I made a little film trailer, like a suspense film trailer for you with all of the missing, the lost patrons. So here it is.
Wait, when did you join Patreon?
Back in November. Why?
Then why haven't you had a shout out?
In a world where nobody is left behind, where shoutouts are kept in a detailed Excel sheet, what happens when she forgets?
She forgets things all the time. Why are you making such a big deal about this?
Because they were on the spreadsheet!
Forget the spreadsheet, it's useless now.
From acclaimed directors Sam Gardner and Louise Troist comes a film so unsettling, you'll need a cocktail. We have to keep looking for clues, Christy Filipich.
All right, why do you keep using my full name, David Lawton?
Starring the Oscar-winning Bella Stewart as Laura, a.k.a. Detective Stonedalot.
Wait, what?
Stephen Plume as Detective Richard White Sox.
Go Sucks!
And introducing Karen Miller as Detective Big Booby Girl Lauren.
Sometimes you don't get to choose your nicknames. They choose you. There were three victims, Nicola Clark, Kim Schroers, and Sam Patterson.
There were others! We were victims too!
So we're the lost patrons
This summer, take your ginkgo biloba, do some crossword puzzles, and cross your fingers Taylor can remember The Lost Patrons. Coming soon to a theater near you.
Ooh, love that.
Nice. Thank you for that exciting film trailer. That was a good segue back in, right?
Yeah.
But we all loved it a lot. Oh, God, I've got to commit to stuff. I really did love that as well. I just sound sarcastic all the time, which I guess is helping my sass.
I think
so.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, I have a listener crime. This is from someone who's written in and says, when I was in my early 20s, I got extremely drunk at a bar one night and went home with some guy. The next morning, I went back to the bar to pick up my car and there was a deep key scratch all the way down one side of my car. Mm. The question is, who scratched my car and why? And now there is a list of suspects. The suspects are, number one, the bartender. I was so drunk that the bartender had to take away my keys. It's possible that I was belligerent and causing problems. I was not a happy drunk most of the time and luckily no longer drink. Suspect number two, the hookup. Suspect number three, another guy. Was there someone else I was flirting with that I didn't go home with and wanted revenge? Suspect number four, any other stranger. Again, not a happy drunk. It's possible that I pissed someone else off. She goes on to say, love you ladies and please, please, please don't stop. From Karen. Short time listener, but a huge fan.
Aw. I have a unique rage that comes with people who key cars because I don't understand. It's just destructive. I can find no, like, if someone steals something, there's always that part of me that's like, okay, well, they're desperate. And keying a car is just randomly destructive. And I can't believe you'd get any pleasure out of it. And then somebody's car is fucked up. I'm just sort of irrationally angry about
it. Yeah, it feels just totally unnecessary, doesn't it? It doesn't achieve anything.
What I'd like to know about this story is, were there other cars in the area that got keyed? Because often a car keyer will key a car and do loads of them in a row, almost as though they kind of like, you know, if you're sort of like doing you've got a felt tip and you're going over a page and you go on to the next page, they'll just do, they'll do that.
Well, they go on to that and they're like, oh God, I've gone over the line now. Better than this car.
May as well destroy this car.
Now everything has to be red.
Oh my God, car keying wars. Who can do the most even line?
Psychology.
I want to know how they knew which her car was, because I don't drive very much, but I don't think the registration number is on the keys of a car. Is
no,
it?
That's
in the same way you
true.
Don't have your address on your house keys. In
you
case
could press the button though, right? You could press the old...
Yeah, you could press the button.
Depends when this happened.
Yeah. It depends when it happened, you know, on what kind of car she had.
And also, yeah, I've never had a car. Let me just say, I've never had a car that you can press a button and it opens. Absolutely not. You have to give it a good wiggle before you get into any car. I never own.
Our car's got moss growing along the windows and a flower with two blades of grass growing out of the windscreen.
Wow.
And it actually bloomed. And then we went to a car wash the other day and it's taken flower and the grass away, but not the moss.
That's so beautiful. Yeah,
thank you. It's because we didn't drive it for months in lockdown. Yes. But actually, also, we are such pigs that it got burgled along with loads of other cars in our road, but they didn't get keyed. And we didn't notice for about half an hour. Then we were like, oh, there's more stuff on the floor than normal. And
then like, oh, did I tell you? I might have told you this story before about how when I was a kid, I had a spud gun because I was a bit of a legend. And I was like sort of putting, like, you know, shooting people with bits of potato. And then I think I wasn't supposed to have a spud gun, so I hid it under the car seat of my mum's car. And then, so there was a potato underneath that just, because it was damp under there, because it was an old car, it just started sort of like spouting and it came up all up the side of the chair and everything. It was brilliant. Like, having a fucking life in a car like that is actually really beautiful.
I love that.
Yes.
That could be like part of an art exhibition or something.
And honestly, it's good for us. Like, I've just been learning about forest bathing. Like, it's very nourishing to be around growing
life. I love
life.
It. Even if you have to grow the forest around you.
Yeah. Like a potato in a car that's decaying / growing is like a lot like forest bathing. It's just very, it really helps your immune system and you just really relax.
I always think if you've got damp, if there's somewhere damp that's either in your home or in your car, like get some cress seeds because they're going to grow and it's beautiful. That's how you
deal
with it.
That's your way. If you've got a rented accommodation and there's damp, put some cress seeds in it and then tell your landlord or lady how long it took them to grow. That's the measure of how damp it is.
That's great. Do you know what? Because you know, like one of the metrics of the world is like how easy it is to get Coca-Cola, like measures something about like various things about the economy, like how quickly cress grows in a damp flat would be an awesome yeah. measurement of like a bad landlord.
Yeah.
That should literally be the test, like the new Bechdel test is like the cress test, the Izzy City cress test.
I think this was a very random attack, I must say. And I love pinning stuff on suspects, especially when they are detailed. But none of them add up to me. The bartender's just doing his job, rightly so, taking keys away. And then he doesn't care which car is yours. You know, you'll have to come back and get the keys. That's your problem. Hookup isn't going to go back to the scene of where they met, right? That's just too much work, even if it was a terrible experience for either. Mm-hmm. Random person angry, maybe. But again, to Izzy's point, how would they know which car
it
is?
Yeah, you'd have to really know it was that person's car.
I think
car.
It's just that the worst place you can leave your car in a way is right outside of a bar where people are drinking heavily.
Is our conclusion random attack?
It is for me. It is for this guy.
Is it possible that she could have done it? She was that drunk.
She was so drunk.
Oh, yes. And that's why he took the keys away, because she was trying to get it in. What? Yeah. Was the keying all around me? Block. Someone's keying my car. Have I?
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's it.
What a twist.
Solved it.
She did it. Ooh. That is a Kaiser Soze moment.
You're very welcome.
We've just victim blamed, and I'm sorry. But
oh no, we did it again.
God, yeah.
We always blame the mum. So I think it was your mum, is what I'm saying, Karen. Was it right. Karen?
Yeah. We solved it. Congratulations, everybody. We have just enough time to ask our fantastic guest, Izzy City, what are you up to? Where can we find you? What do you want to plug?
Oh, I would like to plug my book, which is out on July the 22nd. It's called Jane is Trying, and it's a novel about a lady who is engaged to a man, and they work in advertising in London. They're trying for a baby, and she's a very anxious, but kind and cool person, very complex, like we all are, I suppose.
Yeah.
And she like just wants a lot of control over her life and doesn't get it. And anyway, she finds out that he's been cheating on her and she moves back in with her parents in the Midlands to a place that isn't Matlock, but is like Matlock.
Oh my God.
I always write about Matlock where I'm from, so I'm trying to move away from it. But it is like Matlock in some ways, but not in other ways.
Did you call it Batlock? Yeah. Just to protect.
Exactly, Oh, actually, man. In Welsh, Matlock is spelt Fatlock. It's pronounced Vatlock, but yeah. Anyway, whenever I have to write after a mutation, it becomes Matlock, and I always think, that's so funny. Yeah. So Jane, she goes home, and then her parents are really mollycoddly, also try and control her life, and then it's about kind of what happens next.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'm super sold on this already. This is awesome.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Tell us the name of the book again and where we can find it.
So the book is called Jane is Trying. I looked down the lens when I said that as if I was doing it to camera. Okay, guys, the book is called Jane is Trying. It's available. Yeah, it's called Jane is Trying. It's available from all bookshops and the usual places. And it's published by Orion. I'm proud of it. There are some things that you do and you sort of go, that was all right. But I've worked really hard on this. And
it sounds amazing. It sounds congratulations.
Awesome. On the audio version, is it you reading it?
Yes, and I'm recording it. I've done 2 days and I'm doing it this week as well. And I forgot how intense it is and how he goes, oh God, I need to change that bit. So I keep emailing the lady keep calling everyone a lady. Who's project managing it. And being like, can I make one more change? And she's so lovely. And it's like, yes, you can. So it's just me in a little booth kind of.
Oh, this sounds so good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so that's mainly what I've been doing. It's taken me like 4 years because I had another kid and then lockdown happened. And I kept thinking to myself, like, all these things I'm going to do when lockdown lifts, as if there was going to be this moment where you're like, okay, back to my old life. And what we're finding is actually it's just very slowly and tentatively going, oh, I just hugged someone, that felt weird. But all the list of things that I wanted to do were things that I had to stop doing because I had kids, not because of lockdown. So it's like, I'm going to go clubbing. Stone Roses. I want to go stay up all night at Green Man. I want to just go to Prague for 2 days. And it was like, No. It was a lockdown that stopped. Good old lockdown. That'll be my next Edinburgh show.
Well, it just remains for me to say thank you so much, Izzy Sidney.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast, and thank you for listening. Bye!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.